My name is Jeremy Devins, and welcome back to the Quiet Mind Astrology Podcast. And today we'll be talking about how to navigate difficult transits and what do you do when these transits happen. We'll talk about all of the grahas, the planets, and how to work with them. And you'll want to know your own birth chart. So if you don't have your own birth chart, go to quietmindastrology.com. Get your free birth chart. Sign up for free weekly horoscopes. And at the end of this episode, I'll talk about the weekly transits coming up as well. And very exciting because right now, the Yoga and Ayurveda mentorship is open for enrollment at quietmind.yoga/YAM. For a limited time, we'll be starting the next cohort very soon. This is the 9th iteration of this program to allow you to go deep into your yoga and Ayurveda practices. You can learn more at that link, quietmind.yoga/YAM. Enrollment is open just for a limited time right now. So what do you do during a difficult transit? And what is a difficult transit? And let's start by just talking about that. So some examples of this would be Saturn return, Sarasvati retrogrades, Gandhanta transits, transiting grahas that are in poor dignity. And those of you who are newer to this, graha means grasp, it means hold, it means containment of energy. And we're talking about planets. You say planets, grahas. Graha is just a Sanskrit word, has a lot more depth of meaning. And then if there's a dasha of a graha that's in poor dignity. So I'll give examples of all of this. These are just some. There are actually many more possible ones, but these are just some to start with, and we'll go into this. And this will be actually very deep today, but also a bit of an overview because there actually is a lot more we could cover, but these are great ones to start with. So Saturn return. This is every 28 years roughly, depending on retrogrades and such. Saturn transits back to where it was when you were born. So when you have a Saturn return, usually around age 28, 29, 30, around age 60, around age 90, and then the full lifespan from the Vedic perspective would be 120 years. And Saturn brings obstacles, challenges, it brings this level of maturation, and usually there are some sort of big crossroad decisions that we need to make at this time and obstacles that we need to overcome. So if you're watching the video, you can clearly see on the inside is the main birth chart of somebody, as an example. On the outside is where Saturn is now over the same place that it was in their birth chart. So when they're born with Saturn in Capricorn, when Saturn transits to Capricorn, that's a Saturn return for them, which happened in 2020. And if you are born with Saturn in Aquarius right now, you're having a Saturn return with Saturn in Aquarius. If you're born with Saturn in Pisces, when Saturn's in Pisces, you have a Saturn return. Second difficult transits to look at, and we'll talk about what to do with these in a little bit, but the second one is Sarasvati. So this is when Saturn transits over your moon and the house before and after your moon. And this is a 7.5 year cycle of overcoming obstacles and the areas that are affected in your chart. So again, if you're watching, you see the same chart I just showed, Saturn's over Capricorn. That happens to be Saturn return and Sarasvati for this person because their moon is in Aquarius. So if you have a moon in Aquarius, when Saturn goes into Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces via the transits of every day, you know, as we go forward through time, that's when you're in Sarasvati. If your moon is in Pisces, you're in Sarasvati when Saturn is in Aquarius, Pisces, and Aries. If you have a moon in Aries, you're in Sarasvati when Saturn is in Pisces, Aries, or Taurus. And all, actually, not or, but all three. So as you can see in this example, I'm showing Saturn over Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. For the person who has a moon in Aquarius, that is their Sarasvati time. Now, we all go through this throughout life. It is typically a more challenging time of life, more obstacles. I liken it to a marathon runner or a hurdler, where you're running over hurdles and obstacles, and you have to do it. You have to be very responsive. You have to be adept. You have to navigate more and more challenges, and they keep coming. And this can lead to great growth and success. If you look at somebody who does these hurdles in like Olympics, they have super fit bodies and super good health. So if you can navigate the Sarasvati time, it can lead to a lot of major growth for yourself. And also similar with the Saturn return. Saturn is the planet that brings challenges and obstacles. So wherever it transits, including Saturn return, Sarasvati, Saturn moon transits in general, aspects, these things are more challenging, but also can be highly, highly rewarding. Saturn rewards hard work and service and patience. So again, what to do, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but the third difficult transit that happens every year for everybody is retrogrades. So this is when a planet appears to move backwards. No planet ever actually does move backwards, but from our perspective on Earth, it looks that way. And those energies, those areas of life affected by the retrograde tend to require some sort of reviewing, revisiting, revising. There's usually some sort of needing to redo things in this area. So if you look at the example charts, I'm still showing the same ones if you're on the video. Can you find the retrograde planet? There's actually only one of these three different charts. These are from different years as well. Because retrogrades happen every year, but there's also times every year where there's no planet retrograde. And those are usually times where things can move forward. Often it can be even a little overwhelming of how much possibility and potential there is. But when things retrograde, now that invites you to slow down and review, revisit, revise things in that area of your life. And if you found it now, it's Jupiter retrograde in Gemini over the second house of this native in the example chart. So that would bring the qualities and the energies of Jupiter, the teachers, wisdom, philosophy, our beliefs and values in Gemini, where there's maybe many different teachers, many different philosophies to explore, lots of different interests, lots of communication, lots of learning, great transit for learning. And it's over the second house of family, home, and assets. So you put all that together and you can interpret it's time to go back over lessons you've learned in your family, review issues with finances and commerce, with family assets, things like this, maybe addressing a will or revising a will, things like this. Those are all auspicious activities to do during that example of Jupiter retrograde in Gemini in the second house, over the second house for this native who happens to have Rahu in their second house. So family things are probably very important to them in general. So you get the idea, putting these things together, but again, how do you work with it? Like, what do you do? Those are some examples of like real life things, but I'll share some practices you can do to support these. The fourth challenging transit that we all go through every year is the Gandanta transits. And this is when a graha, a planet, I say graha more often than planet when I'm teaching, because graha refers to the sun and the moon, which are luminaries and not planets, as well as Rahu and Ketu, which are points in the sky rather than actual planets. So the graha passes from a water to a fire sign. And this is considered a Gandanta movement. Gandanta means karmic knot, and this is a untying of a karmic knot. And this may be somewhere you feel stuck in your life where you've been blocked, energy is not flowing. In the same way a hose gets knotted up or kinked up and the water stops flowing, when you go through a Gandanta transit, it is showing you where the hose is kinked up, where the blocks are, where energy can now flow better if you address that issue. Like if you're trying to water your plants but the hose is knotted up, you have to unknot the hose if you want to water your plants. In the same way with the Gandanta transits, you have to address this thing if you want to have the thing you're moving towards, the desires, the goals, the vision, or whatever you're moving towards. So can you see, if you're watching the video, where there's a graha moving from a water to a fire sign? And that's also the cycle of the elements, all the four elements that we use in Jyotish. Sometimes there's five, but typically we use four, and it's earth, air, water, and fire. And there's this cycle from Aries being a fire sign, Taurus being an earth, Gemini being air, and then Cancer being water. And then we repeat the cycle again to fire. So water to fire is the ending of that cycle of the elements and starting the next cycle. So if we look for the water signs, we have Cancer, Scorpio, Pisces, and no transiting planets over Scorpio, just the moon is over Cancer. So moon moves pretty quickly. It spends about 2.5 days in a sign. So that is moving from Gandanta, from water to fire, from Cancer to Leo. So that's one, the moon. But those happen quite frequently, 3 times every month, and it's pretty quick. So it's usually not too dramatic, but it can be at times, depending, especially if someone's a Cancer ascendant or moon, you're going to feel the Cancer transits more. If you're a Scorpio ascendant or moon, you're going to feel the Scorpio transits more. But especially for Cancers, you're going to feel the moon transits a lot and feel like a different person all the time, every day of the month. So looking elsewhere, we look to Pisces, we see we've got Sun, Rahu, Mercury, and Neptune all there transiting over Pisces. So as they get closer to Aries, they will be in that Gandanta zone. So not necessarily at the beginning of the water sign, but more towards the end of the water sign and the beginning of the fire sign. So we can't see the degrees in this particular picture, but let's just say the Sun is at maybe 23 degrees of Pisces. So it's in that Gandanta zone. It's towards the end of the water sign and beginning the next fire sign. And it's especially pronounced from Pisces to Aries because that's the last of the full cycle of the elements. Pisces, the last water sign. Aries, the first fire sign and the first of all signs. And Pisces, the last of all signs. So there is that big transitional energy there from the water to the fire. And it's this changing of energies, this shift of energies where you must address something that is the result of your karma, of your action, of your being and your doing has now created these circumstances in your life that you must address if you want to move forward in a certain direction. If you don't address them, those knots remain energetically, physically, emotionally, and you've got to repeat the cycle again. And you'll have to learn that lesson in a maybe more difficult way or more dramatic way the next time Sun comes back a year later, back through this Gandanta zone, or whatever the planet is, whatever the signs are. But if we undo that knot, now we free up energy, we can go on to our next hero's journey or our next learning and lessons in life. But if we don't do it, it gets stuck. And this, I had like very physical stomach issues several years ago, and that this just stayed stuck until I undid this karmic knot of self-expression I needed to have, this anger, this frustration that was stored in my body from early life that needed to be expressed. This is about 10 years ago. And once that happened, my voice became easier to project, more confident, more present. So much freed up energy. It's just incredible how much moved. But it was not easy, you know. And the tighter these knots get, the longer they're there, the more difficult it is to untangle them. In the same way, if you knot up like whatever, you you tie something up and the knots get tighter and tighter, it gets a little harder to undo them. It just takes more time and patience, but it can be done still. And when the Gandantas happen, it's the time to do that in the area affected. You could say Mercury, if it's the Sun, it's issues with the Father, your creativity. If it's Mercury, it's issues with your communication, your business, etc. The fifth difficult transit we'll consider today is if there's a transit in Graha that's in poor dignity. The dignity refers to the placement. So a planet, a Graha, can be debilitated or exalted, or multi-cone. Debilitation is obviously more challenging. Exaltation is obviously more beneficial, more auspicious in general. And multi-cone is generally very auspicious as well, second to exaltation. Or a planet, a Graha, can be in an enemy sign, or it can be directionally weak in the house that it's in. So this generally brings negative and inauspicious results in the affected areas of life. Using the same example chart, Moon is in its own sign of Cancer. That's generally very good dignity, unless there's some sort of negative aspect, like you see also that's aspecting the natal Saturn and Mars, so that's a little more challenging. And it's also aspected by Pluto, so that adds some element of challenge there too. But generally, Moon in Cancer is very good, so when you're looking at a whole chart, you got to kind of weigh all these things holistically to make sense of like what actually to say and what actually is going to be the most dominant energy. But we do have some planets in poor dignity, and I'm using this term as a general term. It sounds more black and white than it really is, because you do have to weigh everything else in the chart. But you can see that Mercury is in Pisces, and that's considered debilitation. So that would be considered a poor dignity for Mercury. And that's likely going to bring more communication issues, miscommunications, misunderstandings, difficulty with expressing yourself verbally. And there's also possible positive aspects, and we'll talk about that, how to bring those out. But just because something is considered a negative or positive dignity doesn't tell you the whole story, but it does tell you that this is probably something to pay attention to and put more energy into addressing and bringing out the more auspicious, positive side of it and working with it. And we'll talk about how to do that in a second. So the sixth and final difficult transit to look at today is if a graha is in poor dignity and you're going through that dasha. So again, using the same example chart, birth chart on the inside, transits on the outside, we see that Jupiter and Mercury is the current dasha they're going through. And we have Jupiter in the birth chart in Capricorn, that is considered debilitation, and Mercury in Pisces, and that's considered debilitation. So that is extra challenging to go through the Jupiter dasha and the Mercury sub-dasha, and especially when it's just starting here, it's five layers of the dashas, all the last four are all Mercury. So activating that Mercury debilitated energy. So first of all, Jupiter in Capricorn, they're needing to learn lessons through this dasha about limitations, restrictions, being too optimistic, being naive, and then the universe humbling them and teaching them where to be more grounded, more practical, more Capricorn with their big ideas, and sometimes could be grandiosity or too much hubris. And then within that whole cycle from this example chart, 2039 to 2055, they're learning these big lessons about their teachers and the limitations of what their teachers can provide for them, because it's Jupiter and Capricorn, their own naivety because of their expansion of Jupiter, their big visions being grounded and limited by the practicalities of Saturn and Capricorn. And it's ruled by Saturn's dispositor is there as well. So even more Saturn energy on the Jupiter. And of course, this is actually a chart from 2020 when we all went through this with the pandemic and the lockdowns and the immense level of restrictions across the world. So that's a strong, very strong example because it was all these other planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Mars, and Pluto in Capricorn. We saw that. But just for this example of the chart right now, that Jupiter transit, that dasha is going to be challenging for them. Just looking at the birth chart, you can tell that. And then we're not really using the transits right now for this one, but looking at Mercury and the birth chart, we see it's debilitated and there's going to be some miscommunications. So during this phase now, 2044 to 2046, this person will be learning about how to communicate more clearly and how to be more grounded and practical in their communication because of the Capricorn thing. And running into obstacles where they're misunderstood, the business prospects are not what they thought they'd be. They overlooked some important detail because it's the 11th house. And there's falling outs with teachers because of the 9th house aspect. Travel can be extra difficult and they can end up losing money in travel and even being coerced or caught into some sort of scheme or scam because the optimism of Jupiter being blocked by the limitations of Saturn and the optimism of Mercury and Pisces, the dreaminess, needing to come back to reality and grounded back into the Mercury clarity and communication. So this, all that to say, this Jupiter-Mercury dasha is going to be challenging for this native. Now, if you had Jupiter in Cancer and Mercury in Virgo, those are exaltation, that's the opposite placement, that dasha for you of Jupiter-Mercury would be very auspicious and positive as a general rule. So you wouldn't have the same kind of concerns. The interpretation would be very different. But because of the poor dignity and the placements I'm referring to, they could expect these kind of negative results during their Jupiter-Mercury dasha, unless they do some of the things we'll talk about today. So, in short, the energy must be expressed. If Jupiter's in Capricorn, that energy must be expressed in some form. All of the carbon of the universe has coalesced into the form of who you are and the transits around you and your birth chart and your cosmic constellation to say that that energy must be expressed. But you have choice in how it expresses. So you're not just having it doesn't have to be negative. It doesn't have to be that you have that placement I mentioned and you travel and you lose money and you have falling out with teachers. That is possible, but that's just one expression of the same energy. So another example is Saturn returns. People get scared about these, they worry about this and think it's going to be bad. It could mean that you have one setback after another showing you where you're out of alignment, and you can choose to fight back and resist those lessons and be really adamant and defiant, or you can choose to find the lesson of Saturn, which is humility, and find ways to be of service and more disciplined in your life. That's the same energy expressing in a more auspicious, positive way. We have choice, and we don't always feel like we have choice. We don't always have awareness of the choice. So that's where it comes to being aware of the energies that are at play. So we look to first, what graha is affected in these difficult transits? It could be the sun, which is your sense of self, your vitality, your willpower, your leadership, your ego, your pride, your father. It could be the moon, which is your mind, your emotions, your mother, your receptivity. It could be Mars, which is your energy, your drive, your warrior spirit, your courage, the brothers in your life. It could be Mercury, which is your intellect, your communication, your learning ability, your wit, the commerce that you work in. It could be Jupiter, which is the wisdom, knowledge, the abundance around you, your expansion in your life, your teachers in your life. It could be Venus, which is love, beauty, harmony, pleasure, and luxury in your life, being affected by the transits. It could be Saturn, which represents your restrictions in your life, the limitations, the discipline in your life, duty and authority. It could be Rahu, which represents obsession, desire, foreign things, and unorthodox thinking. It could be Ketu, which represents detachment, spirituality, liberation, and karmic lessons in your life. Now, when these are affected, what do you do? Well, here's some ways to express those energies and bring out the auspicious expressions of each graha. So for the sun, you can do sun salutations, vinyasa yoga, right nostril breathing, and do these practices on a Sunday, and you can wear the color orange, which is the color of the sun and Surya. So on a Sunday, doing vinyasa yoga and then doing a pranayama of just breathing through your right nostril, which is the nadi, the energy channel associated with activating the sun solar energies in yourself. If it's the moon that's affected and you want to bring out the more positive expressions of the moon, you can do yin yoga, restorative yoga, gentle yoga, and do left nostril breathing, just breathing through your left nostril. And especially doing these things on a Monday will bring out the more positive expressions and strengthen those lunar energies of the moon. If it's Mars affected, you can do Hatha, Vinyasa, Power Yoga, Kapalabhati, or Breath of Fire, this rapid inhale and exhale through the nose. And Tuesday is the day of Mars, and wearing the color red will strengthen Mars. Also, for the moon, the color silver is the color to wear there. For Mercury, you can do pranayama. Any pranayama practice is great. Nadi Shodhan especially is very balancing, where you inhale one side, exhale the other, inhale one side, exhale the other, and you go back and forth, sealing one nostril at a time. That's a great way to strengthen and bring out the more positive expressions of Mercury. And Wednesday is the Mercury day of the week. And Jupiter can be bring out the more positive expressions through meditation. Any meditation practice is good. Svadhyaya, this is self-study practice, any sort of self-study journaling, self-awareness practices. Ishvari Pranidhana, this is trust in a higher power or surrender to something bigger than yourself. This could be God, the universe, whatever resonates for you, whatever your background. And any sort of breath retention is very good, like holding the breath in. So when you inhale, you hold the breath and then work on expanding that capacity to hold the breath in. Thursday is the day of Jupiter. Venus can be bring out the more positive qualities through partner yoga, kundalini practices, white tantra, red tantra, and practicing on a Friday. So Friday is the day of Venus, great day for going on dates as well, but also doing these practices, partner yoga. White tantra is usually like facing a partner and doing breath work or energy work to move energy through your body. Red Tantra is the more sexual practices that you do with an intimate partner. Saturn can bring out the more auspicious qualities through seva, selfless service, doing service like at a church or a spiritual center or a place that you want to contribute to. Hatha yoga, which requires discipline, and tapas, meditation practices, any meditation, just sitting in stillness is very good for Saturn. Any sort of breath suspension, holding the breath out. That's when you exhale, empty the lungs, and you pause there, keeping the breath out. That's great for strengthening the Saturn qualities, the discipline. And any sort of deep training, like going into intensive studies. In my own Saturn Dasha, I've done tons of trainings, and this is a great use of that energy. Saturday, of course, the day of Saturn. And then we have Rahu and Ketu. So Rahu doesn't have a day of the week, but we can work with the Rahu energy, bring out the more positive qualities when we become obsessive. We can do Hatha yoga practices, Vinyasa, power yoga, noble silence, choosing to refrain from speaking. If you go to a silent retreat, you'll do this for several days. And any sort of deep training as well for Rahu to just direct that energy. And then for Ketu, any sort of meditation, mantra, pranayama practice, seva, selfless service, and deep training. So with these more malefic energies, Saturn, Rahu, and Ketu, which usually are more challenging, being a student, being disciplined, being a practitioner, brings out more of the humility of these energies and more grounding to these energies, and gives you more perspective of the lessons they're teaching you. So this is a nice image, if you're watching the video, to screenshot this and just have this to reference. When you go through transits, and if it's a challenging transit for any planet, you can do any of these practices. And these are all yoga, meditation, pranayama practices, lifestyle things, and just simply like wearing the colors, you know, orange for the sun, silver for the moon, red for Mars, green for Mercury, yellow for Jupiter, pink or white for Venus, blue for Saturn, and grays for Rahu and Ketu. Now, you also want to consider your own chart and see what planets are strong or weak there, what planets have positive or negative dignity in your chart. If you have a very negative placement for Mercury or Saturn or whatever, just being aware of if that energy is now excessive or deficient. And if energy is excessive, like too much Saturn, you're too serious, you never laugh, you never have fun, you're just always alone, you're depressed, you're not happy, this is too much Saturn. So in that case, you probably don't need more discipline, more restriction in your life. You may need more Venus, more desire, more following the senses, enjoying sensual pleasures, food, taste, touch, smells. So being aware of yourself and your own chart is always foundational to this. And that's a big part of what I teach in the Yoga and Ayurveda mentorship is self-awareness, knowing yourself, and connecting and aligning to your true self before you make any big changes. Because you've got to know where you're starting from before you change anything, because you can actually create worse imbalances if you don't have that self-awareness. So a quick little recap of all of these difficult transits. The Saturn return. This is Saturn affected. So doing practices to support the Saturn energies like seva, hatha, meditation, deep training will help support you in your Saturn return to bring out more of the auspicious expressions. And your sadhisati, what's affected? Saturn again, same thing as last, what I just said, seva, meditation, deep training. But also the moon is affected. Saturn is over the moon. So this affects your mind, your emotions, your mother energy, your own mother or yourself as a mother. So doing more yin restorative gentle practices like moon things will help bring out the positive expression of this as well. When you're going through retrogrades, like in this image, you see Jupiter's retrograde. So that's affecting your wisdom, knowledge, abundance. So you do things like meditation, mantra, self-study, breath retention. These things will all support Jupiter during their Jupiter retrograde time and bring out the more positive expressions like learning new things, having great teachers, more abundance in your life. When the Gandanta is happening, like in this example, it's the sun. The sun is Gandanta in Pisces going to Aries. That's affecting your sense of self, your vitality, your willpower, your ego, your father. So do practices like sun salutations, vinyasa yoga, right nostril breathing, and wearing orange. And on Sundays, doing these practices to help bring out the positive expressions and work through this in a more auspicious way. Number five, when you have a transiting graha that's in poor dignity, like we see in the outer chart is the transits, the inner chart is the birth chart. The Mercury is in poor dignity in transit, it's debilitated. So that affects your intellect, your communication. So you do practices like pranayama or mantra to direct that energy in a more auspicious way. And the sixth difficult transit we looked at today is if you have a dasha of a graha that's in poor dignity. So we've got the Jupiter-Mercury dasha here because Jupiter is debilitated, the Mercury is debilitated. So what can we do? Well, Jupiter practices, meditation, breath retention, svadhyaya, journaling, self-study, wearing yellow on Thursdays. And for Mercury, pranayama practices, Nadi Shodhana, mantra, wearing green on Wednesdays, doing these practices. So that can help bring out the more positive side. And generally when you're in a dasha, you start with the main dasha, the maha dasha first, you work on that energy. And then secondary, very close second, you work on the sub-dasha or antar-dasha, which in this case is Mercury. And then the last three layers often can change pretty quickly, sometimes within months, sometimes within weeks. So those may not be as significant, but still they are significant. So you could work at that third level as well. But beyond that, they do change pretty fast. So generally, the first two levels are essential for the dashas. The third level is debatable, depends on how long the dasha is, and then the last two usually go pretty quick. So working with those may be a more day-to-day thing if you are working with something that day. But that is our look at six difficult transits: the Saturn return, the Sati retrogrades, Gandanta, transiting grahas that are in poor dignity, and the dashas of grahas that are in poor dignity. And hopefully this gives you some perspective of how you can work with these energies, because you always have choice. The energy must be expressed, and we always have choice in how to do that. So we can, again, like I mentioned before, you know, Saturn return could mean one setback after another, showing you where you're out of alignment, and you can resist that, or you can choose humility and service and discipline and practices, and then that will bring up the more auspicious side of that energy. And if you want deep practices to learn about all this kind of stuff and even more, how to work with the energies in your life, how to connect to your true self and deepen your own yoga and Ayurveda practices, that's what we'll be doing in the Yoga and Ayurveda mentorship. And what I've seen with this after now, this is the ninth iteration of doing it, people go through massive life change from this program. And I talked to them later and like they've moved across the world, or they've changed their relationship and found someone, their life partner, someone they've fallen madly in love with, or they start their dream career and now they're teaching yoga retreats around the world, whatever the thing is. So I've realized that this is a hugely catalytic program. It's a lot about your own personal growth and learning about who you are, but also learning a lot about yoga and Ayurveda, learning the anatomy, the philosophy, applying it to your life. Super fun stuff. I love getting to share this, so I'm very excited to share this. This is the time to enroll right now at quietmind.yoga/YAM. Limited time that this is open, so you can go there. If you're late, you'll see the wait list for it. But if you're curious, if you want to go deeper into yoga and Ayurveda practices, have a deeper connection to yourself, and really bring out your gifts into the world, that's the sort of result of all this, is you have a stronger sense of connection to yourself, you transform in the areas of life that are most present and relevant to you, health, wealth, relationships, and purpose. And then you share your gifts and service to others. And that's what I really love to do. That's why I love astrology. It's like helping you discover your gifts. And for me, just that curiosity and discovery of like, what is your gift? What are you here to do? What can you do better than anyone else in your own unique way? And how can you connect to that and live from that place? And I've been fortunate to do that, I feel, for myself. And that just brings me so much joy to see others do that. So I'm excited to share this in the Yoga and Ayurveda mentorship. You can check it out now at quietmind.yoga/YAM. And that is our look at the things to do in a difficult transit. So now we're going to shift gears into the Friday forecast and look at what's happening over the next roughly 2 weeks, because the next episode will actually be already the May 2024 horoscope. So we're going to look at the last big transits of April for the last 2 weeks. So what's going on in April? Well, let's do a little quick check-in again where we're at astrologically. The eclipse season is ending now over this next week. The 6-week window of the lunar and solar eclipse, the 2 weeks between, the 2 weeks after each one. This is a big portal. So you've probably made some sort of big changes in your life. You felt like this need to make a decision to move in a direction. And now we're on the tail end of that. So as Mercury is still retrograde in Candanta, just a couple more days while I'm recording this, it's not the best time to sign contracts or make final decisions on new things. But if it's things that have been in the works, fine, totally okay. You might want to do some of the Mercury practices like Nadi Shodhana to bring out some of the more clear thinking and more positive expression of this. Venus is Gandanta, going from Pisces to Aries, and this can bring out some things that need to be addressed, karmic knots that have been stuck in relationships that need to be untied so the energy can flow again. And Jupiter is about to leave Aries into Taurus on May 1st, so this will be a time of major expansion and growth starting from May 1st all the way through the next year, 2025. And of course, I did a whole episode on this. You can go back to last week and listen for your signs, your rising and moon sign, to hear how that transit will affect you. Now, let's look at what's happening over this next couple weeks. So on Monday, April 22nd, Mars moves into Pisces. This brings energetic and determined pursuit of your spiritual and creative goals, fiery energy into our imagination, assertive action with a compassionate and empathetic approach, and increased passion and drive in service-oriented endeavors. So this is generally very positive and a great place for Mars to be, where our warrior energy meets our imagination and dreams and vision and starts to put them into reality. There could be some impatience here and being too idealistic during this time from April 22nd while Mars is in Pisces. So be aware of the over-idealism, but great time to take action on your visions. The big thing happening this week is April 23rd. There's a full moon in Swati in Libra. So you can look where Libra is in your chart. That's where you have the full moon. This is a culmination of your efforts in relationships and collaborations, a time to celebrate your relationships, positive energy for finding balance and harmony in your partnerships, a time of heightened awareness and clarity in social interactions, where you might feel more self-aware, but also more aware of others and what they need. And this is a great time to find things that really work well in relationships. There may need to be some sort of compromise and adjustments around this time, but generally it can be quite positive. There could be some emotional intensity of the full moon. This is generally the case, and heightened sensitivity. I generally like to either lay low on the full moon or do some sort of deep spiritual practices that day. And you may find that the energy is a little bit unhinged in society when you go out, and there tends to be more accidents on the full moon, so being extra cautious there. Wednesday, April 24th, Venus in Aries. Now Venus is moving out of exaltation of Pisces into the fire of Aries for 23 days from April 24th. This brings a dynamic and assertive approach to relationships and social interactions, a lot of passion, a lot of drive, and great for romance and sexuality as well. Favorable time for initiating new connections and partnerships. And there may be some difficulty in sustaining them, though. Venus in Aries is great at starting things. Whatever you want to start passionate about, go for it. But sustaining it is a different topic. And when Venus goes to Taurus, that's where you start to see how to sustain those connections and desires. And there's a positive influence on your own personal charm and attractiveness, and potential for impulsivity or conflicts in romantic matters. Watch the tempers, but bring it into passion, desire, sexuality. It's a great use of that energy. And then on April 24th also, Venus is in Ashwini in Aries. So it's in the nakshatra of Ashwini, which just brings more of this initiative, passionate, quick decision-making, and desire to express affection. And there's a healing energy to all this as well. So that romance, the connection, the sexuality, the sensuality, the music, the art can all be quite healing during this time. Still some impulsivity, similar energies to the Aries. And then on Friday, April 25th, Mercury goes direct. So all the retrograde of Mercury issues are solved. You can no longer blame Mercury. You've got to blame yourself or take responsibility. So Mercury goes direct, but it still is in the shadow zone. So you got a little time to blame Mercury for some stuff, where it's going back over areas of the sky it's already been. And we may need to redo some things that we started a few weeks ago, revisit them, revise them, readdress them. But now there's more clarity in forward movement and communication and decision-making after April 25th. It's a great time for implementing your plans and ideas that you developed during the retrograde, clearing out the space, ideally, during the retrograde. Did you do that? You clear out some space, you let some things go, and now you got more space to move forward, completed some old things, tied up some loose ends. But now you can have more positive energy for clear thinking and effective expression. There is some potential lingering effects of the retrograde causing caution in communication, requiring caution in communication. And then on Saturday, April 27th, the sun moves into Bharani Nakshatra in Aries. And this brings a determined and focused approach to your personal and professional matters. It's a great place. Sun in Aries is wonderful. And in Bharani now, it brings more positive influence on your individual goals and expression. Bharani is the symbol of a yoni, life and death, this portal between worlds. So there's a great potential for starting something major, of major importance, new in your life, birthing something new into your life. There's increased determination and perseverance at this time. There could be some issues of being overly assertive or rigid in pursuing your goals. But overall, this is wonderful energy. One of the big things to watch out for this month is starting too much and being overly ambitious and just keeping that in check to what it could be sustainable when sun and everything and Taurus, sun moves into Taurus, Jupiter moves into Taurus, Venus will move there as well. So we're going to have a lot of grounding energy shortly after this in May. But in April, these last couple weeks, a lot of potential to start things. And then finally, on April 27th, Mars moves into Uttara Vajrapada. And this is an energetic and determined energy to pursue your spiritual and humanitarian goals. There's assertive actions with a focus on service-oriented endeavors, increased passion and drive in collective projects, and there's potential for impatience or conflicts from being too idealistic, similar energies as mentioned before. So that's our look at the Friday forecast, what's going on over the next couple weeks before we go into next week, the May 2024 horoscope. But again, right now, the next big thing I'm offering is the Yoga and Ayurveda mentorship. Very excited about this. Quietmind.yoga/YAM. Check it out. And if you want to go deeper into the sister sciences of Jyotish, of Yoga and Ayurveda, this is where I share all my best resources from my many years of being immersed in this stuff and working with thousands of students around the world. So this is the place to do the deep work. Like even when I give readings, I'll say like, you know, this might be a good transit to do this, like do these practices or try this. Well, this is the place now where we'll do those practices. And that's something I've wanted to create now and really clarify that for years of like, actually, this is the place. And I've improved it. I've made it more focused on this part of it. Like we learn about the transits, we learn about ourselves, we learn about the deep work that we need to do to grow, but when and where do we do it? Where's the container for that deep growth? This is that container. This is the intention of it. Quietmind.yoga/YAM. If you want deep growth, if you want to have a new breakthrough in your health, wealth, relationships, and purpose, this is the place to do it in a sustainable, supported way with support from me and your peers. So quietmind.yoga/YAM, and that is the Quiet Mind Astrology podcast for this week. If you enjoyed it, leave a review, share it with a friend, leave a comment on YouTube. Thank you for listening and look forward to sharing more with you next week on the May 2024 horoscope.